Good evening, everyone. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. If you're listening to us live right now, please click the follow button so my boss knows I'm doing my job. Thank you. I want to give a shout out tonight to a terrific author, Robert Gregory Brown, who not only writes the best suspense and thrillers. He is a very talented composer and musician. He created and plays our theme music. So thanks, Rob. And a big shout out to author D.D. Corbett, who wrote The Amaretto, a Florida Keys sailing adventure. A little murder mystery there. You can find that on Amazon. I also want to thank Poise Pen Productions, 11, and Dalton Creek Candle Company, the underwriters for tonight's show. As you know, we're celebrating and honoring Women's History Month, and we're talking to women writers this month. This is Women's Writers Month, and so I'm very honored to have a very special guest co-host with me tonight. Dee Dee Cassidy scribbles daily, this is what she says, scribbles daily in various genres, including magical realism, urban gothic, science fiction, and literary fiction. Her goal? Messing with your mind by transforming the voices in your head into odd stories. Deborah's been a guest on this show. She's a frequent caller and she's a terrific friend. It's my pleasure to welcome to the guest hosting spot in the studio, Dee Dee Cassidy. Deborah, hello. Welcome back.
Hi. It's great to
How
be
are
here.
You?
Thanks.
Thanks. How's
pretty well.
You're doing okay?
Well, it's healing. I had some major surgery, and it's kind of, it's taking a while to heal, but it'll be fine.
Good. And this is not interfering with your writing, or it is, because obviously it's your wrist and typing is not that easy. Are you playing hunt and peck with your laptop?
Well, I'm doing a bit of that. I've also discovered dictation. So I do dictation with a software called Dragon, and I do that.
Right.
And I also do a little hunting and pecking, and it hasn't slowed me down too much, which is great.
I wonder how different is it for you to speak your story versus typing it?
It's completely different. Now that I've discovered dictation, I think I'm going to keep that as part of my repertoire. I find that when I speak my story, different things come out because I'm using a different part of my mind, and I really like the different ideas and the diversity that comes out speaking versus just typing. So I think I'm going to keep that as part of my routine.
I would imagine on dialogue it really helps too. It makes it more real, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. So instead of being tied down to what my fingers are going to do, I can talk to myself and do this whole dialogue, and it definitely sounds a lot more natural.
How fun. Well, we're going to dialogue tonight with one of my favorite authors. She's got two books out right now, getting ready to release a third. C.J. Carpenter was born and grew up in upstate New York. She's got a little bit of a raw voice. We talked on the phone quite a bit this week. So we're going to excuse her for that. She says she grew up in the same area where Mark Twain reportedly lived, although she never bumped into him. I'm so glad because she's young and gorgeous. That would have been unreal. she's a big multitasker, so she used her time to complete a design degree at the School of Interior Design, and ultimately the rewarding world of advertising wasn't quite enough for her, so she began to write short stories, long stories, any kind of stories. She started attending writers' workshops, evening classes, weekend classes to develop her writing craft, and she bought every book she could on writing. She claims that her favorite book, and I've heard this from other authors, is Stephen King's A Memoir of the Craft on Writing. It's my pleasure to introduce my friend and author, C.J. Carpenter, to the show. Hi, C.J. How's the voice evolving up, doll?
My voice is coming along. And first, I just want to say it is an honor to be asked for, you know, March Women's Writers Month to be on your show. And just if anyone calls in wanting a Johnny Cash song, I could probably do it. But I'm actually not sick. For some reason, my voice is just a little off. But it is truly an honor, and thank you so much
for
this evening.
Well, you're welcome. Now let's start this off the right way. You mentioned, you know, we are in Women's History Month, and we're honoring women writers this month on Authors on the Air. So who are some of the women who have influenced your writing?
Oh, the list is endless. First and foremost, I'd have to say, and by the way, you know, the whole writer's circuit between Boucher Khan and all the writers, this is the one person I'm terrified to walk up to, and because I adore her writing, which is Jan Burke. Her writing's just truly fantastic. The Irene Kelly series, S.J. Roseanne, of course, Laura Lippman, and I would be completely remiss if I didn't say Zoe Sharp, because she writes such wonderful dialogue and strong female characters, which I gravitate to. And Tess Gerritsen.
She does it all. There's not anything that woman can't do. I mean, you know, she just does it all. So kudos for that one. Really, I agree that she's magnificent. You have some really good inspiration there. And of course, when we spoke with Zoe, what was it, a week before last, you also had a chance to speak to her. I was so glad that you called in. And we talked about that, about there not being, first of all, a lot of women thriller writers have a more difficult time, or a different time, getting accepted. But you also don't see a lot of strong female characters as the heroes of their thrillers, correct?
Yeah, I agree with you completely on that. And I believe when I called in, I had asked Zoe, because my character, Megan McGinn, is not exactly a church-going gal. She is a bit of a mouth on her. And I took it to task in terms of, if I were a man, even though I sound like one right now, if I were a man, would I be under the same scrutiny in terms of the quality of dialogue that I use? And I really enjoy strong female characters. It's just it's something that inspires me and really ignites me to keep writing really strong characters.
We've all read plenty of damsels in distress and thrillers and everything, and they are beginning to look almost one-dimensional to me. There are some that surprise me, obviously, but I don't like that one-dimensional look for women in thrillers. And I'm glad that authors like you and Libby Fisher-Hellman, who was our guest co-host that afternoon, and Zoe, we talked about that quite a bit. And I'm glad that a lot of men are also writing women who are their heroines, their protagonists in their book too. It's changing it up a little bit. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen, but there's another show in this network called Noir on the Radio, and it is mostly noir crime fiction, but we have also added a Dames in the Dark segment. So it's only women crime fiction writers who are doing flash fiction throwdown. And let me tell you, their stories are every bit or better than some of the men that I've heard. And I'm really glad, and I like being able to create that opportunity for women authors too. So it's been I think it's a really good time for women right now. Deborah, I don't know, what's your feeling on that? You've been writing for a little while now, and you write cross-genre. Do you find that, I think women science fiction writers are even better than some of their male counterparts, and there are more of them, it seems to me, that are really outstanding. Where do you find yourself
right
in the debate?
I agree. And actually, it's interesting you bring up science fiction. There's still a segment of the population, both in the writing population and readers, that don't think women belong in science fiction. So it's still a bit of a struggle. But I think in all the genres, it's nice to see women that are jumping in and writing as, you know, strong characters as CJ has, and just showing that, you know, we're just as capable and can write just as interesting stories. So it's still a bit of a struggle, but no, I think it really is a good time for women to be writing whatever genre they're in.
Yeah, I agree. CJ, when you go to pick up a book, is it always going to be a thriller for you?
No, actually, when I'm writing, I actually read outside of my genre, because what I find is that when I'm reading and then I go to write, it's not my voice.
Sure.
Because I'm taking in what I'm reading, and so I specifically don't read thrillers while I'm writing one. I love memoirs. The Glass Castle is probably one of my favorites. And I like reading, believe it or not, just technical books on writing. And I also just, I just make it a point, because I've caught it in my work when I did a lot of versions of Never Alone. Because the first version of Never Alone, I hand wrote it. And that was a lot of work.
You know, Neil Gaiman handwrites his books. A lot of people do. A lot of people still handwrite their books. I think it's a great way to do it, because it makes you think about the words you're putting down there. You really have to be actively engaged in the writing process when you handwrite, don't you?
Well, you have to be actively engaged, but the experience of sharing the pencil to paper and feeling it, you know, I very rarely, when I handwrite, rewrite what I've handwritten. When I'm on the computer, and this, I am not a computer person. And I know, give me a typewriter, I'll do fine.
Sure.
But I just find, especially with this autocorrect, I'm like, well, I didn't write that. Don't correct me. You're
yeah,
not my editor.
Auto incorrect, my most unfavorite thing. I understand
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. Auto incorrect is exactly what it should be. So I just love the experience of handwriting, because it just, for me, and I'm sure a lot of people, it's not their experience as writers, but I feel closer to the work.
Well, it also slows you down, so you are actually in the moment of the work that you're writing.
Right.
You're not speed typing or trying to get it done. You're not getting a word count in for the day. You're writing the story as the story forms in your mind, and I think there's a lot to be said for that. Not like you said, there's not any right or wrong way. It's only right for your purposes, just as Deborah was saying, that using Dragon is great for her for certain parts of her writing process. I'm really interested in the different methods that you both use when you write. So when you're writing, CJ, are you in a very quiet space? Are you in a dedicated space? Or can you write anywhere because you're handwriting?
I tried so many times to go to coffee shops, and then I was just I couldn't stand the noise. So when I write, I always write to music, and it's usually soundtracks. I wrote Never Alone to the Good Shepherd soundtrack, which is wonderful, and also to Silence of the Lambs, which is obvious.
And, right.
And I need some form of white noise. And usually what I do with my television is I put it on the classical channel.
Uh-huh.
And so then I can listen to, you know, Pachelbel or Bach or Mozart, and then I can kind of get into that quiet space. But I'm not someone, I think I'm far too hyper naturally to sit in a quiet room.
Okay.
So
do you write daily?
Yeah.
Do you write every day?
Every day.
And do you do you write for a period of time? You say, I'm going to work from 9 to 3 or 10 to 4, whatever it is. Or do you write whenever you feel you're ready to write?
It's going to sound like kind of a little bizarre, but it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
For instance, two mornings ago, I woke up at 4 a.m. with an idea for a scene, and I hit, quote-unquote, my word count by 8:30.
Wow.
And then I said to myself, what am I going to do with the rest of my day? And I said, right. So, but typically I like to keep on a schedule. I'm a very schedule list-making kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And I really find it, the first thing that I always do is read what I wrote the night before to get me
sure.
in the groove of the plot
right.
again and the dialogue. My work is very dialogue heavy. And I just want to say, I just reread everything before I actually begin. And then I know where I'm going to afterward. So,
interesting.
And then there are some days where by 3 in the afternoon, I've been working on a chapter, and if it's not working, I say, you know what, it's not working, let's start over.
Sure. Well, yeah, if it's not going right, it's not necessarily, I guess that's what people call writer's block, but you've obviously taken a wrong turn. You got to go back and figure out where that wrong turn is, correct?
Yeah, and you know what, I have to believe, you know, I do believe to a certain degree in writer's block, but for me, maybe it's my Irish background, stop being lazy, Carpenter, get down, all right, just work through it. And I did have writer's block when I did a revision for Never Alone, because I knew how I wanted Megan to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted her to be strong but have flaws and also have a level of sensitivity. And I was having a hard time with certain scenes. And that's when I said, all right, put this scene down. Because I also I index card my outline. And I'm looking at, so I stare usually, if you saw my apartment, I have about 50 index cards. Literally taped to my wall, and in the morning I look at the index cards and I'm like, okay, that works, that doesn't, you know, okay, that definitely doesn't work, and this works. And I had a wonderful teacher when I was starting out writing professionally, Robin Hathaway, and she gave me the idea, put a red index card when the drama hits, and then if you don't have enough red index cards, you did something wrong.
It's an interesting concept. You storyboard, essentially, is what you're doing.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And that's a really great idea. I know other authors who do that, who use color-coded paper for keeping characters who are related and making sure that the story arc is where it is supposed to be, where hints are supposed to be dropped. And she's a very successful writer and actually is now schooling other up-and-coming writers. So good for you. Deborah, what is your process like?
Well, that's interesting because I seem to be the polar opposite of CJ here. I'm more of a pantser. Yeah, and so for people that don't know what pantsers are, I just sort of write by the seat of my pants. I do a little bit of planning. I have a broad outline, and I know where I'm going to go. I don't always know how I'm going to get there. But I do also reread what I've done the night before, but I also don't write in a linear fashion. I may write something in chapter 3, and then the next day feel like I need to go to chapter 10. So I actually am all around the place. I also use software as opposed to, I do the storyboarding, but I do it on my computer. I use a software called Scrivener, and it does the same
right.
thing, essentially, that you're talking about
right.
And doing that. And I find that works really well. I'm also not quite as disciplined as CJ, it sounds like. My intention is to write every day, and I usually do, but I can also be distracted. And so I find that I need to, I do have an office in my house, But sometimes it's too easy to get distracted by my three cats or whatever. And so I
sure.
will go to a coffee shop, but I then put earplugs in and pretend that no one else is there. So, but that works for me because I do need silence. I don't need, you know, the distractions. And so if I have earplugs in, there's nothing else that can distract me. And then I go and I hang out and do my writer thing.
Can I ask Deborah a question?
Sure, absolutely. This
I'm curious because everyone asked me this question, and now I can ask someone else this question. How do you start? And I say, I always write the last chapter first because then I know where I'm going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's great.
Do you have any method in terms of that?
That's very close to what I do. I have a broad idea of, like, this is what the story is about, and I know where I want to end up. So, right, I do know that because then I'm writing towards that ending. So I guess it's a little bit like outlining. But I've also been surprised where I get towards the end and think, nope, this person's going to die instead or whatever. And but I do. I have a general idea of where I'm going.
So
I wish I had your discipline.
But mm-hmm. no, but you, what you're doing works for you, and what CJ mm-hmm. does works for her, and you know, and then there's all the other stuff in between and outside. So, but if you're writing chapter 3 and then you get and you say, "Oh, I'm going to write chapter 10," how do you know what's going on in chapter 10 if you don't have an outline? If you're writing just by the seat of your pants, how does that
right.
work?
Right. Well, it's not that I don't outline, but it's not a really detailed outline. I will know that in chapter 1 this happens. So it'll be more of one sentence that
right.
on each card know what's supposed to happen. So I guess it's sort of outlining, but I've met authors who will outline to the nth degree, know exactly
yes.
what's going to happen.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And I can't do that.
No, I'm not that bad. I on my index cards, I literally will have one sentence or I'll have for me, it's the arc of the character. And so I don't go into that depth. I honestly don't have that much patience with myself to do that. And quite frankly, I don't think anyone else would have that much patience with me if I did that.
That's right. I'm thinking about the people around us.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where when I say I outline with index cards, it could be one word. And, but I know what it means. Anyone who looks at my index cards would probably call 911 and perhaps put me into forced therapy. And
exactly. That's right. No one should see the index cards.
Yeah, no. And by the way, I do get rid of them after I finish the book.
So my next question is, how do you decide on the title of your book, CJ?
Actually, that's good. That's a really good question. With my first book was a different title. And then someone came out with it. And then I had to come up with a different title. Hidden Vices, I decided on the title based on what Megan goes through in the sequel to Never Alone. And to be honest with you, Never Alone was not my favorite among all of them because I said it's such a cross because as a writer, you're always alone.
Right.
Yeah, I thought this is weird. Yeah, my book is called Never Alone. Great.
Well, a lot of authors will pull. There's some part of a sentence that pretty much defines the book. So a lot of them will just hit on that and pull it out. Others, you know, you don't understand where it comes from until after you read the book. I just finished a novel that it was a very interesting one, as a matter of fact. But I saw exactly where the title came from. There was a sentence that had the title in it, and it was
right.
an appropriate title. So I really like that. What do you do for your books, D.K. Cassidy? Where do you pull your titles from?
Well,
yeah, mine.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, that's okay. No, I would say so. On mine, I don't pull from the book itself, but sort of the feeling of the book, and so.
Okay.
So I suppose it's when I finish, I think, okay, what does this say to me? And although in my first one, the collection of stories, that the title was one of the stories, but in my second one, no, it was just more a matter of this is how I feel. This title really relays the feeling of the book. So no, I don't normally choose it from the book, but that's a great idea.
Hang on just a second, and let me just remind everyone that this is a copyrighted trademark podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. I'm going to open the phone lines, and I'm also going to turn the microphone over to Deborah, because D.K. Cassidy is a very well-known author herself, and I think that she and C.J. Carpenter have such divergent ways of writing, but they both have strong female characters. You can call in, and in between their questions, I'll be glad to go ahead and put you on the air. The number is 347-633-9609. In the meantime, Deborah, the microphone is yours.
All right. Well, I want to let you know, CJ, that I did read your first book, and I'm going to fangirl all over the place because I loved it. I absolutely adored it. Oh, absolutely. I don't write thrillers or mysteries, and as you were saying, I try to read outside my genre so that I don't feel like I'm writing what someone else has already written, and thrillers and mysteries happen to be my favorite. So my question is, I've read probably every type of mystery, hard-boiled, cozy, international, noir, all of that, and I'm rarely surprised, but you surprised me, and we can't
so
talk about
kind
why.
Of you. Thank you.
Yeah, but you did. I was just, you took my breath away, and since we can't specifically discuss why, I just want to know a little bit more about your process in creating, specifically in your mysteries, your Megan McGinn mysteries. How do you go about deciding, for instance, what the case is going to be? How is that something that just comes out of your brain, or have you read news stories about
mysteries? With Never Alone, it's actually kind of a little bit of a weird story. I was visiting a very close family friend, my mother's best friend. this is going to sound actually very morbid, but if you're a writer, it will just sound like nothing.
It's research, right?
yeah. And I was sitting in the waiting room and waiting to see her. And this nurse came in, unfortunately, to give someone else fairly bad news that their loved one had passed. And the nurse said, she's just too good for this world. And in the middle of an ICU waiting room, I was like, that's it. And I thought, I know. I mean, there is nothing normal about that reaction, by the way, and I own it.
Right, of course.
I own it. I was just like, oh, gosh, oh, you know. But the idea, though, my ideas come in different places. But you know, and by the way, I cannot believe I just told that story because no one knows that that's how I got the idea for Never Alone. And I was, you know, but the most embarrassing thing was I actually said it out loud. I was like, that's it.
Oh, no.
I actually said it out loud. Yeah. And for Hidden Vices, Hidden Vices was more Megan's arc in her character. But I was very specific writing Hidden Vices because I wanted to give a voice to victims.
Let's take a call. Hold that thought, CJ. Let's take a call. Area code, let's see. Let me put on my glasses so I can see where the caller's coming from. I think it's 607. I'm trying to connect the line right now. It's taking just a couple seconds to line up. Sorry.
Sure.
You know, if it's not one thing, it's the other. So be patient. We're getting to you in the meantime.
I think it's 607. I'm trying to connect the line
Okay, somebody has a computer on with the link, and we're not going to be able to hear them anyway. So, caller, if you have a hello. Hello.
Hello.
Okay, you're live on the air. Yep, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Hi.
I'm from upstate New York, but I've lived in New York City, and my, you know, I'm familiar with the C.J. Carpenter stuff.
Okay.
And I gotta say, I'm a man, and I read very few novels, but I rarely read novels that were written by women. I don't know why. I don't know. Like Mary Higgins Clark, I read a couple of hers. But
okay,
I love C.J. Carpenter's stuff.
Let me ask you a question. First
yes.
of all, what is your first name? What is your first name?
Donald.
Hi, Donald. Okay. So C.J.'s on the line. You can talk directly to her. C.J., say hi to Donald.
Hi, Donald.
C.J., I love your work.
Oh,
I can't wait to
so
read
the
next one. Now, any ideas about maybe making TV movies or movies or anything?
You know, if they call, I'll sign.
Sure.
But I
love the character. I'm Irish.
York,
I have
Donald?
An Irish background. And I'm from the area where you grew up. You grew up in upstate New York, right?
Yes, I did.
And did you live in New York City? Is that
I lived in New York City for about 17 years and worked in advertising, but I'm from upstate New York. Some of my family still live there up in Elmira, New York. Yeah.
Well, I just want to compliment you and say keep it up.
Donald,
thank
let me
so
ask
much,
you
Donald.
Something. How did you hear about CJ's work?
They had an article in our local newspaper that they said, that, which I really didn't pay that much attention, and then a friend of mine, a librarian actually, I'm a teacher, at my school read some of her stuff and was telling me about it, and because she knew I was Irish and, you know, lived in the city for a while.
Uh-huh.
And I just, you know, I bought it, read it, loved it. I'm reading the second one right now.
Good grief. You're like the ideal reader. We love you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much.
No, it's too bad because,
thank you
like
enough.
I said, I'm a teacher.
Thank you so much.
These kids don't like to read enough.
Yeah, it's a shame.
But I didn't as a kid because you have to read stuff you don't want to read. Anyway, I don't want to take up your time on your show. I just want to, you know, pay my respects.
Well, thank you so much. I very
really
much
nice.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you so much for calling in and enjoy the rest of the show.
Keep writing.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
God, I love that. You know,
that's
when
so
the
wonderful.
Guy calls and said, I like listening to women, I like reading women authors, you got to give him kudos. I hope he's married and his wife gives him a kiss right now.
I got to tell you, I think that is such a huge, not just a compliment, but it just goes to show you that what we can achieve.
Oh, absolutely. Which you've already been achieving. It's just that people are taking notice. So that, I think, is the difference. I'm sorry. Back to your questions, Deborah, for CJ, and I'll keep an eye out for the phone again. Go ahead. I'm enjoying listening to you talk.
Well, no, you did answer the question about how you get your ideas for the murders and things like that. The other thing I wanted to compliment you on and ask you about is that you have a really nice mix of character development and action. Because sometimes in thrillers, it's all about the next murder and the this and the that. But you have, and I think because you use a lot of dialogue, have done a great job of making the reader feel for the characters, whether they like them or dislike them or rooting for them. And how did you come to that? Is that just natural? Did you learn that in one of your classes? Or how did you decide to have that kind of a mix in your writing?
That's such a wonderful question. I actually, it didn't come through any classes. I think it comes through life and having compassion for people who aren't so good and people who act as good and, you know, act really well, and I think it has it developed. I was extremely fortunate. I grew up, my mother raised, I'm the youngest of four daughters, and she raised us on her own, and I was very lucky to have very supportive male my grandfather, and I call him, I actually think it's in one of my books, I dedicated it to my bonus dad, Joe Chinecka. And I was just very fortunate where I was the omniscient person to look at people and see how they acted. And so I bring that into my work, because even in the person who one thinks is the person in Hidden Vices, it's a bad guy, is still good. Because, you know, you pull back the curtain and you realize that, you know, in my writing, I can't, with the exception of one character in Never Alone, that they walked a road of pain. And,
right.
And not that they found redemption or forgiveness, but they walked a road of pain, and within that, so I didn't get it from any writing classes. I think if you want to be, I don't want to say successful, because successful is a wrong term. If you want to be write and feel the quality of your writing, you need to write your own truth, Not that I've ever had a serial killer come after me, like you're never alone, but you know what?
Right.
There's still time. And
yeah. There's still That's something
time.
A writer would say.
Right?
Well, no, and you're
yeah.
right, because the way you craft your characters, I had compassion for all of them, even the bad ones. So that as you said, you peel back the layers and you let the reader see why is this person the way he or she is. So that's talent. That's great.
I just think that I don't think it's just about being a writer. I think readers deserve the openness of the characters. I don't like one-dimensional characters at all. I can't get into their mind or their heart, and I don't know if you feel the same way, but if I can't
I
get into their mind or their heart, then I'm not going. There are too many wonderful books out there, and I give every book 75 pages. And if I'm not taken in the first 75 pages, I'm out of there.
You're generous. I stop at 50 if I don't like it.
I think you guys are both drifting.
I stop at 50 until my eyes went, and then I had to get contacts.
No, I stop almost immediately because of how many books come across my desk every day. You know, I get 1,000 books a year. And so I'm really, really picky about the books that I read. So I think you guys are overly generous. If someone doesn't grab me, if their character or their story, doesn't grab me immediately in the first, first of all, if it's going to be lousy, I see it in the first page. But I'll read the first 10 pages, and that usually is a chapter. And if I'm not convinced, I'll set it down. Sometimes I'll go back to it, but rarely, because there's so many great books out there. I can read D.K. Cassidy,
absolutely.
I can read D.K. Carpenter, and why would I ever read books that are kind of so-so and haven't grabbed me by the shirt tails right away? I want someone to grab me and say, pay attention to me. And when that happens, that's what you got to read. You know, that's what I want to read.
Well, here's the question I have for you in terms of that. This is why I am very big on writing prologues, because to me, the prologue says, okay, this is the feeling of the book. If you don't like the prologue, you know, it sets up the tone of the book.
I'll give you my take on prologues, okay? Well, first of all, when I get a paper book, and even sometimes e-books, well, all the time with e-books if they're not galleys, all right, if I'm not just getting something on a NetGalley, because I'm one of their power readers in NetGalley. So let's say I have a whole book, whether it's an e-book or a tree book. I literally open the first page, and I see if anything's on the first page. And then usually there's not. You know, there's the 2-3 pages that start off a book. I look at the title. I flip the page, and then I look at the title. For example, I'm looking at Never Alone, a Megan McGinn novel, C.J. Carpenter, Midnight Inc. Then I go to the next page is going to be your copyright information, the printing, and all. I read every single thing on that page. And then I read the dedication, and you kindly wrote something lovely to me. And then I go to the acknowledgments. I always wish acknowledgments were in the back of a book, not the front, because someone sent me a book. Their acknowledgment page was 10 pages long. It was like a little soliloquy going on there. And
Oh, my goodness.
I said, I don't want to read this. Put it at the back if I'm impressed with your book. By the time I had read that thing, I was so turned off to the whole book that I read the first page and I said, forget it, and that was it. So,
oh my goodness! I apologized in my acknowledgments, and I said I need to stop now, otherwise it'll be longer than my prologue.
I consider the prologue as an important piece of the book. I may not know why it's there, but I know somehow it's going to all get tied in. I don't think every story demands a prologue, but then again. If you're going to have a prologue, please have an epilogue too, because it just seems to make sense to me. You know, you don't want to open the book and then not have a back cover. So closing the story out with an epilogue just makes sense. I don't even care if I'm left hanging. An epilogue will close that out. But if you don't have one, that's fine. Don't have a prologue. So
I totally agree with you. In Hidden Vices, I'm not going to, because I know I have some people who are still reading and said, please don't spoil anything.
Sure.
But the last sentence is pretty much the epilogue. And you pretty much know what Megan McGinn is going to do. And but I agree with you. I don't think you should leave. You know, what I think, and I think Deborah would agree, is that, you know, I don't like being talked down as a reader.
That's right.
And I think that's a big responsibility as a writer. Go ahead.
You're right. No, you're absolutely right. You pinpoint something that makes me crazy. I am a super reader. I read 400 books a year, and I read really fast. I'm smart because of books, not because I have just some innate knowledge or anything like that. I got smarter because I read a lot of books and always have. So when someone is telling me more than I need to know about a character, they're talking down to me, or more than I need to know about a background information, or more of the story. I don't want to know every thought that a character has. I don't want you to waste words and not give me the pleasure of writing my own story in my head as I'm reading yours, knowing what the characters look. In other words, making my own movie as I'm reading the book. I want you to give me a roadmap, but don't tell me where to stop along the way. I'll figure that out. Let it be. I say this over and over again. Jeffrey Deaver, who is the master of all things, I think, has always said it's an economy of words.
It's so right.
If you're going to write a book and you're writing 75,000 or 80,000 words for your book, that's fine. Just make sure they're words that move your story forward and they're not, they don't, you know, like I find myself passing through pages sometimes like, story. You know?
Those are filler pages, I call them. Yep.
They're exactly.
I'm sorry, did you say filler pages?
Filler pages.
Yeah, I call
them
filler pages.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're trying to meet their editor's word count. You know, their editor says your book has to be this long, so let's write a bunch of crap in there. And that, listen, if there's another good book in front of me, gone. I don't care how good the story was. If it falls off the list because I'm waiting for you to describe the scenery instead of getting to the meat of the story, I'm not interested.
Yeah. What is your strong suit, Deborah?
I'm sorry?
My strong suit?
your strong suit in terms of I'm very dialogue heavy and I write great dialogue. If something's blue, I call it blue. I can't mm-hmm. come up with anything else.
Right.
I'm not that dynamic.
Well, I've had readers tell me that what they like is my language is concise. I don't have extraneous words. I don't go on and on about the color of green of the door. I get right to the point. So I suppose that would be what I would consider my strong point, is that I have an economy of words. I don't go on and on. So yes, and
I think your world building skills are incredible, though, Deborah. Your world building skills are so good, and I think that's because you write cross genre. You write in multiple genres, and so I think you've trained yourself to. And when you write in magical realism and urban gothic and science fiction, you have to have really strong world building skills. Whereas
yes.
Where CJ is taking real world and mm-hmm. using that landscape for her book. So, yes, she can concentrate on something different.
Right.
I could talk to you ladies all night long because you're both so brilliant, and I had both of you, and I adore your books, and I'm so glad you're here, but we have a limited amount of time left. I want to ask both of you, if you'll indulge me a little bit. I asked CJ this, but I want to ask you, DK Cassidy, my very talented friend, who are the women authors who have influenced you?
I would say the very top of my list is an oldie but goodie, Shirley Jackson, because
sure.
I tend to write odd, sort of off-kilter things, and I just have this memory of being a child and reading The Lottery, that famous short story, and
sure.
she just and also Isabel Allende, another person
yes.
who writes
wow.
in the magical realism
Beautiful.
Genre, and those two are the ones that come form. There's a lot, I could go on and on, but those two probably have in terms of female writers, have really, really affected me and guided me in my writing. So I would say definitely those two women.
Wonderful. CJ, do you think that this will be a series character, or will this be a trilogy and you'll go on to start up maybe another character? What do you see happening for yourself?
I would love for Megan Minkin to go on. My goal is to actually have about 3 standalones that are under work at the moment. That's why Laura Lippman is one of my favorite authors, and she's given me great advice over the years. And I really, really would love to take tasks in terms of standalones. And but Megan's my girl. She's my woman.
There you go.
And,
okay, so I'm glad because I like the books. They're really well written. There's a lot of tension in there. It's a little bit of resolution at the end. I mean, not a lessening of tension at the end of each chapter, but you ratchet it right back up again, and I like that. And I don't care about her language being salty. I think it is who she is, and her circumstances warrant it. So good on you on that. Where can we find you in social media and on the web, please?
My website is cjcarpenterbooks.com, and I'm on Facebook, and I know I'm terrible about this. Everyone keeps nudging me. I've got to get on Twitter, and I was like, what am I going to say?
Actually, you don't.
You've got to get on LinkedIn or whatever that is. And, I would just rather have my cup of coffee in the morning, write a good chapter, and I know I'm terrible with it, but I'm always on Facebook. And by the way, Pam, I just want to add this, if there's time. Thank you so much for the promotion that you did today, and I just want to say that. Thank you for showing that photo of me that Mark Kraniak took who's a wonderful photographer in New Jersey.
We are talking on Facebook. I know he did Terrence McCauley's photo too, and so
yeah.
I dropped a message in his box today. He is wonderful. He really is fabulous.
He's not only wonderful, but that man earned his paycheck that day because he had such a great
time.
Well,
your photos are great. Your photos are great, CJ. I have to say that.
Well, you look gorgeous. He had such a great time, but the biggest problem he had, he said, stop smiling. And I said, I can't help it. It's a good day. And he said, stop smiling.
He said, you're
supposed to be serious. You're an author.
All right, here we go. We're running out of time, babe, and I'm glad that you got to mention him. I'm so glad you came, CJ, and I hope that you'll come back when your voice is better, too. I'm very honored, Pam. Oh, honey, I'm so glad you're here. Thank you so much for being with me. And to Deborah Cassidy, DK Cassidy, as her fans know her.
What does she prefer to go by?
Deborah's name is Deborah Kappas Cassidy. So her author name is DK Cassidy. And
DK Cassidy. Well, that's easy. It's initials. I'm good with that.
Yes, you are. Thank you so much, both of you, for being with me. Happy Women's History Month. On Friday, I talked to Rebecca Warner, who was one of my guest co-hosts. I hope you all have a lovely evening. Thank you so much for being with me, both of you.
You too.
And to all of our listeners, and for Donald for calling in. I hope you have a delightful week, and I'll talk to you both soon, yeah?
Okay, you too.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for being with me, listeners. You're all wonderful. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.